Okay, David, so let's just look at it 30 years on from the foundation and so on, and the story that's gone on before this. How does the service look now on the ground?
Well, I'm a literally NHS baby. I grew up in the NHS. I had TB and lots of serious illnesses in the house. I trained in the National Health Service. It's grown up around me. I take it for granted. It's almost invisible. And it takes almost an effort of will to think back to what it was before the NHS, when sickness was a financial crisis, when medicine was often run on a commercial basis, a field in which commercial principles operate at their worst, I think, and when doctors were sort of sometimes accountants. But if you make that mental effort, an act of mental agility to think back to prior to the health service, you realise quite how much we've gained, that we have a system which is universal, planned after a style, comprehensive, and as far as it deals with everyone from cot to coffin, it's a service where I can see a patient in a general practice surgery in Bethnal Green, and within a couple of days they will be able to have the opinion of probably the top neurosurgeon in the United Kingdom, where in the old days people would have to maybe walk up and down Harley Street and just pick a brass plate at random. I think it has been a service where wealth has not been so much an advantage, and certainly poverty not a disability. And in fields like general practice, which were terribly uneven, in the accident and emergency service, in the way we tackle chronic care, that is the care of the very old or the psychiatrically weak and frail, there's been a watershed. That these are not the groups that private medicine were interested in treating because they weren't financially viable, but the health service has made a real effort to deal with them. And at the same time, the health services in the United Kingdom provided levels of specialist research and medical excellence, which, given we're rather a small country, rather bankrupt country, stand against medicine in the rest of the world. The final thing I think about it, looking back on it from the safety of now, is that when Bevan was talking about these ideas and proposing these ideas, he was a squalid nuisance. He was a wild extremist. And yet he showed that it was not only an idealistic system, but a working system, and one that could be made to be practically administratively possible. And I think this is now accepted, and even the doctors who were so angry against him when he first spoke now accept the NHS as a fact of life. And that's an extraordinary achievement in really quite a short phase of time.
Yeah. Some of the things he had to do obviously involved compromising in order to get the doctors on his side, and he did that very skillfully. Do you think any of what might be characterised as the defects of the system now have emerged from those initial compromises?
Certainly the compromises are now being renegotiated, and I think we're finding pressure being put on certain of the loopholes which Bevan was forced to introduce. This is most apparent on private practice, which is undergoing, I won't use the word renaissance because that's inappropriate, it's undergoing a boom at present in the United Kingdom. I think if Bevan, for example, was to know that this week nurses are being again offered a pittance, that hospitals are being sold off to consortiums of private doctors, or that Bupa are advertising on the TV between the cornflakes and the toothpaste adverts, he would have 50 fits to see that the area of private practice, which he anticipated would quite rapidly wither away because of the excellence of the health service, to see private practice booming. I also feel that the loopholes that allow private supply of all manner of drugs, not all of great quality or clinical worth, many of them dissimilar only in their packaging, he would have found very worrying. I think he might have anticipated some of the problems of the absolute power of the consultants, particularly in the teaching hospitals. And most of all, I think he would have been worried about a health service on the cheap. We must never forget this, that the proportion of money that goes towards our health service in the United Kingdom, excellent as it is really a pittance compared with what comparably developed industrial countries spend. And we have had an health service on the cheap for a very long time. And I think that is undermined, and the low wages and the low quality of the buildings and the lack of money for experimentation have undermined a lot of the possibilities which Bevan would have liked to have seen. Those compromises, I fear, have eroded and started to corrode the original scheme.
There's, to put it in tabloid terms, I mean, people often talk about a crisis in the NHS, and the NHS is in severe difficulties and so on. Is that your view? With let's talk about primary care, for example. Is that your view?
Paradoxically, I mean, having written a book about entitled The NHS in Crisis, I suppose I'd better whip up a quick crisis. But I think that it's a more durable institution than any of us thought. I don't think even the most hostile Tories anticipate the abolition of the health service. I think what is more emerging is a two-tier system in which the very excellent health service is predominantly for those who privately insure and pay, and they're a growing number, and that the rest of the health service is somewhat of a second tier system. I think that primary care, the general practice and the associated health centres and so on, although very slow getting off the ground, are painfully slow, are experiencing something of a genuine renaissance at the moment. I think there's probably more going on in private, in primary care and among general practitioners, some more radical experiments. And paradoxically, the independent contractor status, which many of us would feel is rather a sort of the small shopkeeper mentality, where, you know, a GP has a contract rather more than is a salaried person. Paradoxically, that protected, sheltered status has allowed more radically minded general practitioners the room to manoeuvre independently. And I think I'm impressed reading the material from general practitioners, their research and their periodicals and so on, how much pioneering, outreaching work is going on involving prevention and screening and so on. And that's a very positive side.
That's interesting, because you would there appear to be agreeing to some extent with some of the people on the BMA in the early days who said that the independent contracting status would provide a certain crucial freedom that 100% service would erode.
It's often been the freedom to be inefficient. I mean, it's been the freedom to practice in a converted shop with a few mouldering anti-smoking posters on the wall and not enough ancillary staff, and really for the GP concerned, the single-handed man particularly, to work themselves into the ground in the name of a largely fictitious political independence. I mean, hospital doctors all are paid by the state, and they don't seem to show any lack of inability to make political choices. They're not forced to read The Guardian or anything totalitarian like that. I think there was some wisdom in protecting GPs from direct state employ, in the respect that we don't know what state we'll get, and that barrier, that clinical aperture that slightly buffers them from direct state policy, might work both ways. It's traditionally worked to allow GPs to do pretty much what they want, but nowadays, increasingly, it's allowing them to perhaps experiment in more radical ways.
Very good. So when you look back at Bevan's hopes and achievements, how would you sum them up? What do they mean to you?
Well, to me, Bevan is the most inspiring socialist of in the United Kingdom this century. But he is a man who is paradoxical. He is a very hard-headed administrator and quite a pragmatic man at that, as well as being a profoundly inspiring socialist idealist. And these two elements were essential, I think, for setting up the NHS. I think, as regards his administrative ability, he was the catalyst to force through and coalesce a lot of changes which have been going on in the BMA before, back to the reforms of the early part of this century. Probably you could trace it back several centuries, some of the lineaments of the health service. And as an administrative achievement, I think the NHS still stands up very highly. But there's this other part, the socialist vision, and that's the part that really interests me. And that was the Bevan who said, we are not worshippers. He uses this thing about a juju when you worship. You set up a symbol and then worship it. He said, we're not worshipping some strange, cruel god, whether it's the god of monetarism or the god of profits. We're not passive and fearful people. We can take hold of life. We don't have to just endure it. We can shape our medicine and our homes and plan them for the common good. And that vision and the optimism of that post-war period and the Attlee period, well, also in housing and various other things. I mean, if you read the old picture post, and this is the future, we can shape the world. That is so contrary to the present sort of painful disdain in which members of the government talk about public spending, as if it's a problem, you know, the slightly nostrils flared as if it's sort of something akin to rat droppings, you know, an awful thing that we have to spend to keep the people quiet. And it was Bevan above all who exemplified that optimism, that it is possible for people to collectively plan for each other's good And that is a thing that is so sorely needed again. And that, to me, is Bevan's vision. And that's probably more important than the structure of the DHSS sort of tires of leadership.
Thank you very much. That's great. That's
okay.
Yeah. Did I give you a chance to say everything you want?